A motorcycle revving up is one of those iconic sounds, identifiable in a heartbeat. Some people are excited by it, while others instinctively cower. When we hear that thrumming engine, we might picture the freedom of the open road, or maybe instead it's a back alley or an emergency room. I'm Gina Kaufman. On today's Central Standard, we're going to gain a deeper understanding of motorcycle culture in and around Kansas City from the people who know it best. Later in the hour, we'll talk about a new social media network that helps people who live in the same neighborhood connect and stay in touch. We hope you'll call in and let us know whether social media has changed your approach to being a neighbor later in the show. For now, motorcycles. Let me start by welcoming Darren Marshall to the studio. Darren is the organizer of the local Ride for Kids, and he is himself a motorcycle enthusiast. And Darren, I hear that motorcycle enthusiast is your preferred terminology rather than, say, biker.
Yes, Gina, it is.
Why is that?
Usually because the term biker usually has a negative context to it. People watch too many movies, think that's real.
Think what's real?
Think the whole bad, mean, get out of my way, I'm ruling the world kind of attitude. And there are people like that. I'm not like that. I'm an average guy. If you didn't see me without my helmet or my gear or on my bike, most people wouldn't even guess I ride a motorcycle. And that's kind of the way I like it.
Well, when did you first get into riding motorcycles? How did your love affair with the bike begin?
Well, a friend of mine sent an email or called me and said, I put a motorcycle on the school's list and I can't get it to show up. Can you help me? Because I'm tech support. And I said, what kind of motorcycle you have? And she told me, and I said, wow, how much you want for that? She said, well, I'm giving it away. And I said, well, I'll take it. So she gave me this old Honda CB650.
And when was this?
This was in the spring of 2001. I just wanted to tinker with it, play with it, maybe sell it. I didn't really want to get on it because I had that negative context of motorcycles because a friend of my mom's son was in a bad motorcycle wreck and almost died. My grandpa was a motorcycle police officer, and my mom has some bad issues with that and stuff. So she always, no motorcycles.
Stay off of motorcycles.
Stay off of motorcycles. So I went and picked it up, tinkered with it, got it running, and I just said, well, I'll just take it around the block. And I drove around the block, and I kept going, and I went around the next block, and I just... It was love at first ride. I fell in love with riding, that openness, that freedom of riding just in the neighborhood. And I probably put 100 miles in a month just riding around my neighborhood.
So you just hopped on and rode. This is fascinating to me.
Just hopped on and rode.
Because I feel like my perception has been that because of this idea that it's a danger, kind of a dangerous activity with a lot of risk associated with it, that you would have to like get a lot of training or get some careful instruction. But you just hopped on and went.
I just hopped on and went. I was very careful. I did drop the bike once. I did have a little bit of a crash once. I didn't have a helmet. I didn't have a jacket. I didn't have gloves or anything. And even just going 20 and 30 miles an hour around the block, I did crash one time. So that said, hey, if I'm going to continue to do this, I need to learn how to do this right.
So that first ride, when it was, as you put it, love at first ride, can you put into words what it was really precisely that you fell in love with about it? Because you can be in the open air on a bicycle that's not motorized, mm-hmm. on a boat. Like, there are lots of ways of traveling out in the open air.
I would have to say it's the sense of freedom you get. You get it's really hard to explain unless you've done it. When you ride, you don't have the roof above you, the windshield in front of you, feel the wind, you get hit by the bugs, you smell the smells. If you're driving through a neighborhood, you can tell who's barbecuing and who's doing their dishes and who's doing their laundry. You can smell the vent from the dryer. You get all these receptors that you never get in a car. And for me, for some reason, it just clicked and I was in love.
So you have mentioned that people in your own life have had pretty profound negative connotations with mm-hmm. motorcycles. How did they respond to your newfound interest?
I didn't tell my mom for about a year and a half. kind of hid it from her a little bit. But most people were generally receptive. You get the people who say, oh, that thing's a death trap. You're going to get killed. Whatever, whatever. But
do you know any statistics on that? Just the safety and of
not off the top of my head. I don't. I always wear a helmet. I always wear my gear. I have my jacket over there and my helmet. And you know, they stay with me. They don't very rarely get even locked on the bike or anything. That's my personal thing. It's like I can only equate it to a woman in their purse. That's my purse sitting in the corner over there. So
a lovely accessory.
Yes, it is. But there are people who don't want that stuff, and that's fine. That's their choice. I think I don't know what the statistics are, but the odds are if you're going down without a helmet on, you're going to have some kind of injury. I had a friend at work. His brother was in a real bad accident, and his wife actually died, and he lost part of his leg. But he had a head trauma, too, because he wasn't wearing a helmet. Now, if he was wearing a helmet, would he have had the head trauma? It probably would have been less. He still may have suffered it. I don't know. But, you know, it's just one of those things that you, if you think about it and you worry about it, you probably shouldn't be riding the bike.
Now, tell me, this must be a really profound love you have for what you do, that it's like rises above like experiences of friends that, like the one you're describing. What is the role of risk in your love of this activity? Is it actually part of it? Is there like a thrill element?
I wouldn't say there's a thrill element that much. I mean, it can be thrilling. I get the thrill from driving in Colorado in the mountain and going at a 10,000 foot pass. And those are the thrills that I really like. I don't get that much of a thrill. If I want a thrill, I'll take a track day and I'll go and I'll sharpen my skills on a track where nobody's going to hit me and I can lean and try to get a knee down and do that kind of stuff. And there are people who like that stuff and people who do that all the time. People who race. I know people who race, who love it. That's not my thing, but I've done it, but it's not my thing.
Is there a sense of community among motorcycle enthusiasts in our area?
Definitely.
Talk about the community.
There are many clubs in town most clubs are associated with the dealer. Like all the Harley, the Hog chapters, Harley Owners Group, are attached to dealers. Like every dealer has their own chapter. And I know like the V-Star Riders are with the Yamaha dealer, and there's a lot of associates. I'm the vice president of the Kansas City BMW Motorcycle Club, and we have a very close relationship with Engel Motors, who's the local BMW dealer.
So people join clubs?
People join clubs. It's a social factor. You can join a club or you don't have to join a club. And people join clubs depending on what they want to do. There are clubs that are social, that have things going on almost every night, doing things 2-3 times a week. They're going to dinner, they're going here, they're going there. And there's some clubs that only do one thing a month or two things a month. So,
well, let's get our other guest in on the conversation. I'd like to introduce Randy McBee. He teaches at Texas Tech University. He contributes to the International Journal of Motorcycle Studies, which, yes, that is a journal. And he's in the process of writing a book about motorcycle history. So, in other words, Randy, this has reached something beyond mild obsession for you.
Yeah, I actually started riding motorcycles. I actually grew up in Kansas City, Missouri. I grew up by Worlds of Fun, and I started riding when I was probably 10 or 11, you know, mini bikes, dirt bikes, eventually street bikes. And about probably 10 years ago, I began to look at it more in terms of an academic or intellectual subject. And I met a bunch of people through the International Journal of Motorcycle Studies who had been organizing conferences for a few years before I got involved about every aspect of motorcycle culture.
Can we go back to that youthful experience when you're living near Worlds of Fun? Because I'm wondering how riding a motorcycle compares to the scariest rides at Worlds of Fun.
I actually worked at Worlds of Fun, too. So I never thought of motorcycles as being scary. Motorcycles, mini bikes, motorcycles, dirt bikes, as the other guests pointed out, it's just fun to do. And I started riding when I was young and continued for about probably 15 or more years. Eventually, street bikes were a different experience. The problem with street bikes isn't the street bike. It's not the person riding street bikes. It's the people in cars.
Interesting.
And, you were asking about some statistics. About 3/4 of motorcycle accidents involve a collision with another vehicle. In about 2/3 of those cases, it's the person in the car hitting the motorcyclist. And so the greatest danger for motorcyclists is not the motorcyclist. It's typically the person in the car who typically doesn't see them or in some cases just doesn't care, I suspect.
Well, just as someone who's sometimes driving a car and motorcyclists will be around, I am actually pretty terrified of being too close to a motorcyclist. And I think that because of knowing some of that idea that just how dangerous, in fact, a collision would be to that person, how can a driver be respectful of the motorcyclist, and what should a driver expect of a motorcyclist in terms of that person's navigation of the roads, the shared roads?
Well, that's a tough question to answer. I think the fundamental issue right now, I think, for motorcyclists, helmets attract lots of attention, but I think the big issue right now facing motorcyclists is the issue of sharing the roadways. There have been some incidents in the last year or so that have attracted lots of attention between automobilists and motorcyclists and some of the violence involved. But the discussion is typically focused on the violence and is focused less on sort of the problem that automobilists and motorcyclists faced in terms of sharing the roadways.
Yeah.
And I think it's the issue that's going to, shape this discussion for the next several years.
So in your research on the history, what are some of the moments in American cultural history that established our kind of collective ideas about what it means to ride a motorcycle?
Well, probably the most important one is the Hollister Motorcycle Rally of 1947.
Tell us about that.
Hollister was a small sort of town, agricultural-based community. There had been several motorcycle, they were called gypsy tours at the time. They were linked or associated with the American Motorcycle Association, typically sponsored them. And there were several established before World War II, Laconia, Sturgis, the Hollister Rally. They're suspended briefly for the war, and then they reemerge after the war. And Hollister was one of the first ones to take off after the war. They were expecting, a typical gypsy tour would include races, various track meets, hill climb contests, things like that. More motorcyclists showed up than were expected. There's different accounts as to what actually happened. Most accounts describe the motorcyclist as becoming increasingly rowdy, racing up and down the streets, drinking to excess. It attracts the national media, and out of this image is born the motorcycle outlaw.
And then movies, I would think, also have had a lot to do with this. What are some of the classics?
Well, the one that sort of is based on the Hollister Rally is The Wild One, a 1953 starring Marlon Brando.
Oh, yeah, and the promotional materials for that say things like, a gang of hot-riding hotheads who terrorize and take over a town.
Yeah, and the term terror was used, to describe Hollister. What happens at Hollister is that Life magazine will have a picture of a motorcyclist leaning back on a pre-war Harley, beer bottles scattered below on the ground beneath the cycle. And that sort of image is sort of seared into the minds of the American public and will shape the way people think about motorcyclists. Now, I think that's somewhat debatable. I don't know if that image becomes the dominant image. What will happen by the 60s is that other groups, the Hells Angels are the most notorious or most well-known, will attract increasing attention. And that term biker, you began a discussion with at the start of the show.
Yeah.
Biker is a very historically defined term that doesn't really show up until the latter part of the 1960s. And the biker from the start is associated with violence, antisocial behavior. And that, I think, is more of a reflection of what's going on in the 60s than it is of what happened in Hollister in 1947.
And then another movie I'm kind of curious about is Easy Rider, because that's a really different kind of image of what it means to be a motorcyclist and what people are pursuing. It's got this sort of open road pursuit of America and sort of the ideals that America represents, like independence and independence of spirit, really.
Yeah, it comes out in 1969. Easy Rider is probably the most influential film. I've talked to numerous motorcyclists, and they often reference Easy Rider as the movie that really made them sort of interested in motorcycling and made them want to go out and buy a bike. That movie attracts a lot of actual good critical attention. It also links the motorcyclist to the counterculture, the sort of hippie on a bike sort of theme that emerges out of that. But it does have those other sort of qualities in terms of the open road freedom, somewhat of a critique of American sort of consumption and abundance at a time of, you know, increasing political debate and conflict across the United States.
Do other countries have this thing where, like, what kind of mode of transportation you use says something about you and your identity? Is this a particularly American obsession?
It is to a certain extent. I mean, you've got the mods and the rockers in England, guys on scooters, guys on bikes. You know, there's some moments where there's conflict between those groups. But a lot of what happens, even like groups like the Hells Angels begin to export sort of their sort of image, and they establish clubs across the world. And that happens as early as the 1960s in some cases. And so that image of the outlaw motorcyclist and the way in which Americans use motorcycles, there's lots more motorcycles across the country, but they're typically small bikes. They're typically for transportation. They're not these big, you know, 1,000-pound Harleys that we have that are common in this country. Motorcycles across the world are typically more for transportation than what we think of them in this country.
Why?
And so that image does get exported, and that image of the American outlaw or the biker is very, very common. But, you know, this is what's going on right now with Harley-Davidson and some of these other companies. They're trying to export or sell more and more bikes overseas, and they're confronting problems, for example, like in China and India, where there aren't that many roads. And how do you sell a bike that's really built for cruising on highways when there aren't that many highways in some of these countries and the transportation issues that they face?
Well, back a little closer to home, we've talked about rallies, but what's the whole rally thing about? Why do motorcycle enthusiasts gather at rallies?
Well, I mean, rallies go back a number of years, and part of what I talk about in terms of the importance of rallies, you know, I think it's an opportunity for motorcyclists to get together. It's an opportunity for motorcyclists to get away from everybody else. A gypsy tour was seen as a place for motorcyclists to meet off the beaten path. Typically, issues of traffic and congestion and facing automobilists, you know, shape sort of, I think, these early years and thinking about sort of why motorcyclists are going to rallies and the fraternity that's involved and the solidarity that's involved in going to a rally and the sort of relationships that are built. But it clearly, I think, didn't simply reflect the fact that they wanted to simply go out and kind of do their own thing, but it also reflected, you know, sort of dealing with the public and dealing with the sort of issues they faced on America's highways.
And on what might be considered the other end of the spectrum from rallies, what about the charity ride phenomenon? Our guest in the studio was recently involved in one of those. Have charity rides and organizations become part of people's ideas of what it means to be a quote-unquote biker, or is that still outside the stereotype? Go on, Randy.
Oh, you were talking to me?
Oh, yeah.
Well, charity rides and things like that have been around for decades. I mean, you can find them quite active throughout the post-World War II period. It was something that was always there, always part of that image. The extent to which the public sort of accepted that image or accepted that is difficult to say. I mean, I think these days, I think motorcyclists are some of the most active involved in these charitable types of activities. They're some of the most well organized. And I would think that it's increasingly becoming part of that image. I don't know if it was at first. I mean, you've got that image of the outlaw motorcyclist that they're trying to downplay. And part of trying to downplay that image included community events or charitable sort of activities to try and present another side of motorcyclists, but it's been there for decades and decades and decades.
Well, despite that old Marlon Brando, leader of the pack, motorcycle tough guy stereotype, nowadays the average motorcycle owner is an educated 40-year-old with a professional career and a very time-consuming hobby. Central Standard's Christina Leffring went to a recent rally in Johnson County to see who she'd meet.
This sounds like a motorcycle rally. And it looks like one, too. Burly men and women with bandanas, sunglasses, and leather vests. Bikes with lots of shining chrome and flame decals. But it's not Sturgis or a Harley rally. It's the Ride for Kids, a charity fundraiser for the Pediatric Brain Tumor Foundation. And some of the passengers are kids in treatment or remission for brain tumors. Jenny Nelson is one of them. She rode sidecar with a large man with the road name D-Day, dressed like your typical tough guy biker.
I always thought, oh, it's a motorcyclist? I better stay away from him. But the guy I was with, he was the sweetest person. So apparently I was quite wrong in my view of motorcyclists.
Jenny may have been surprised, but her mom, Linda, wasn't.
We have friends and that have some friends that have motorcycles, so we know that not everybody is the stereotypical Harley rider.
Of course, bikers who participate in something like Ride for Kids might not fit the outlaw stereotype. But motorcyclist websites list rallies and rides across the country, and a surprising number of them are for charity. Or maybe it isn't surprising. Longtime biker Mark Riggin says charity rides are part of motorcycle culture.
Volunteers and all the bike riding community supports events like this, and it's not only Ride for Kids, but it's a lot of other type of things as well, you know, veterans efforts and all kinds of charities and philanthropic type endeavors, and I think it really speaks to the kind of people they are.
There's something else motorcyclists tend to have in common, according to longtime rider Mark Clark.
If you were to go around and ask a common theme from every rider here, they would tell you it's the freedom of riding that draws them to motorcycles. Because you are in touch with the world. You smell it, you taste it, you feel it. You don't get that in an automobile.
And that's partly why they enjoy taking first-time riders, like the kids or their parents, on their bikes. So they can share that experience. Emma Ryder and her sister love it.
It was pretty awesome. It was like I was in a roller coaster, but it wasn't that fast. So I liked it more than a roller coaster.
Here's Jenny Nelson and her mom again, describing her first ride.
When we first went over the first few bumps, I was like, oh, I was really holding on tight. But it was cool to feel the wind against my face and everything. It was fun. I would love to do this again.
So now she can say she's a motorcycle rider.
After the ride, there's a ceremony to thank the organizers and riders who raised the most funds. Then everyone, bikers, kids, and parents, sit at picnic tables under a tent to eat a lunch of sandwiches and cookies before getting on their bikes and hitting the open road.
Christina Leffring brought us that story back from the Ride for Kids, and you organized that,
yeah,
right?
I'm one of the task force leaders for the Kansas City Ride for Kids.
Tell us about it, Darren.
Well, we benefit the Pediatric Brain Tumor Foundation, one of the largest non-governmental brain tumor research organizations in the country. It was founded 30-odd years ago by a gentleman named Mike Trainer, who one of his co-workers' daughters was diagnosed with a brain tumor and eventually died. And he was one of those guys that says, we have to do something. And he arranged the first Ride for Kids. It was in Atlanta, Georgia. And I actually know a guy who was at that ride, and he said it was very special. So, yes, we do. We do 37 rides around the country, and we try to raise a lot of money.
So we heard a lot of voices in there, a lot of especially young voices,
yes,
of people experiencing the motorcycle for the first time. One of the comments was that you can smell and taste and feel the outside world. Can you tell us, kind of bring out some of those senses? Tell us about a ride you had where the smells and feelings put you in touch with your environment in a different kind of way.
Well, one of the things I miss is the old Wonder Bread Company over by I-35. Used to be able to drive through there and smell the bread cooking in the morning. I drive up 119th and I-35 every morning. I can smell Oklahoma Joe's cooking their food in the morning at 7:30 in the morning. You smell the food being cooked. You drive through a neighborhood, you can tell who's doing their laundry. You can smell the dryers going and the fabric softener smell. There's one phrase out there that's riding a car is like watching a movie. Riding a motorcycle is like being in the movie.
Well, thanks so much to local motorcycle enthusiast Darren Marshall and Texas Tech professor Randy McBee for joining us. Randy, when can we look for your book?
It should be out this spring.
Well, that's great news. Central Standard is going to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll talk about meeting your neighbors online. More about that in a minute. Stay tuned.